This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to this business masterclass segment of our show. I'm glad to be joined by Richard Angus, who will drive this conversation. This is the business skills conversation brought to you in association with USB Ed. Over to you, Richard. We're talking HR today.
Yeah, well, just a reminder to everybody. Last week, we had a show on growth and scalability with Adam Rabinowitz. That's downloadable via the podcast. Today's theme, supported by USB Ed, is on the whole question of human resources and performance management. Joining us in studio today is Gerard Bonzer from Kutuzana Africa Consulting. Have I got that right? Did I pronounce that right, Gerard?
Kutaza.
Kutaza. Kutaza Africa Consulting.
And Richard knows what that means, right?
No. What does that mean,
Ellis? We'll get Gerard to explain it.
Okay. They provide a broad range of consulting services to entrepreneurs and businesses in the area of human resource management, all the way from competency profiling and assessment to business coaching and mentoring and pretty much a whole lot of stuff in between. Really interesting profile. So welcome, Gerard. Thank you for joining with us.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Good, good. Also, just a reminder, we have got some SMEs in the studio, I think.
Yeah, they'll get the time to pitch.
They're going to get an opportunity to pitch their businesses to us, particularly in the second half of the show.
We look forward to that.
So we look forward to that. So, Gerard, this whole question of performance management, I think most people, you know, if you're an employee and you talk performance management, either that word brings on the thoughts of bonuses and payments, or if you're a business owner or a manager, it brings on images of, oh no, I don't want to do this. What is performance management all about? Let's just kind of define what performance management is for the listeners out there.
Performance management can be seen as a process where management, in fact, all managers and all workers work together in determining what the goals of what they would like to achieve in a particular period, which is normally a year, and then manage those performance goals in terms of what the company should be venturing in.
Okay, so ultimately, if I'm running a business, when do I have to start worrying about performance management? Is this something that I only worry about when I've got 100 people? When does performance management become relevant for me as an individual?
I think it's part of the – not just an HR process. I think it's a business process that needs to be embedded into the whole process of delivering ventures that you would like to go in. I think even a new worker starting with a business, I think the induction program is as important as the recruitment process.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it starts.
Okay.
A question from me for her, though, because I've also, you know, participated in performance management as a manager as well as an employee. And I must say, I never liked the process because what it often has tended to be is that it is used as a stick to also punish people. So the question to you is that one of the fundamental objectives of this process, or that is the process perverted?
I think the process can be very technical, and I think from that point of view, the view has been seen by our workers as the hidden stick method. And I think the crux in the matter is the carrot that hangs behind it is what the rewards will be in for me. I think performance management is much more than that. It's more an improvement tool. It's more a development tool. And I think it's more coaching structure that you need to put in place. So the process itself can be mechanistic, but I think the dynamics around the process that actually has not been looked after.
You mentioned the word mechanistic. I'm actually thinking the process can also be very archaic because we're moving into a knowledge economy where you have people who don't necessarily have to be full-time employees of an organization. And they tend to be very transient. These are knowledge workers, you know, the artistic types. So should we still be running the process using scores and scorecards and numbers? How adaptable is performance management to the new reality?
Absolutely. I think the knowledge economy, as we go into it, it's all about the transfer of those knowledge into implementations and work results. Mm-hmm. And I think the measurement there is you cannot get away from. There should always be a form of data or stats that you need to fall back to in terms of how you're going to feed information back to people. So results would be a form of the stats. Targets be met. So that's also a transform of learning and knowledge in another way.
Okay. And just a question. I mean, fundamentally, different age groups, let's call them the generations, behave differently in the workplace. Does performance management alter and change? As I mean, you know, you got the baby boomers, and you go through all the different generations.
The Ys, the Xs.
The Ys, the
With different expectations as well.
Exactly. I mean, it's often been said that, you know, what you expect or have from a generation Y and Generation X and a baby boomer, very different things will happen. How does this touch in the world of performance management? I would imagine it has a huge impact.
Absolutely. I think it's the approach that you use within in performance management in dealing with these different generation groups. In South Africa especially, we have the whole issue by diversification, but it goes much further than that. If we look at the Generation X, which is probably the generation in the age group of 35 to 50 years old, most of them are very professional, disciplined in their way of working, which is totally different to the Generation Y, which is more the millennials. Mm-hmm. Their orientation towards work is totally different.
Yeah, they have no commitment to a single employer.
You know. Well, yes,
at least that's one attribute.
Yeah. They come across aloof and as if they not want to engage themselves with the world of work. But I think the world of work, my view, is that they want to be engaged all the time. They get very frustrated in the type of work they do. They get bored quickly. Mm-hmm. So their way of feedback is almost like every day.
Okay.
And I think the way that you deal with them is totally different to what you'll deal with other generations.
Yeah, and I guess the reality is when it comes to performance management, timeliness and responsiveness are key elements of how you manage performance. So if you've got a Generation Y being managed by Generation X, and the Generation Y wants instant and real feedback, and the Generation X says, "I'll give it to you in 6 months' time."
Yeah, we have to have a workshop first.
Yeah, that's really gonna make the Generation Y want to stick around and be committed and be part of the process. Okay, so generational elements obviously have an impact. Let's talk for a moment about and there is a performance management cycle that we talk about traditionally. Let's talk about how one goes about doing performance management and that cycle in terms of how does it start? Where do you start when you're trying to set up a performance management framework in your business?
Well, the framework should be focused in terms of the loop, in terms of what the company should be venturing in. I think the basic process is starting off by planning, mm-hmm. determining where the organization is going in terms of goal setting, and then link up with the individual's goals with the organization. This would then unfold into some form of monitoring. But also monitoring of reflecting and giving feedback continuously. The feedback that you're going to operate there would be on a continuous basis. And then obviously there should be some form of review, as they refer to. Now, the review I see as a reconciliation of a particular period, which should be a reconciliation of 6 months or to a year, and then to say, well, let's have a look at what happened in that period. So the feedback is not the review. I think the review is continuously. Mm. Even part of the planning, there should be part of a review because it's reflecting what continuously happening, why, and understanding why these goals and achievements need to be focused on. So it's a very much a focus on where we want to be and where we are at the moment.
Mm. Richard, you took off a cycle, and I get scared when I hear that because that means – We'll see you in 6 months' time when we finally get the rush through of these performance appraisals.
What happens
between January and May?
Well, I'm thinking more, perhaps not a cycle, more, let's use the word process. So
yeah.
The process of setting up a series of expectations up front with whoever's engaging.
So when does that happen?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, so set the expectations up front.
Uh-huh.
Know what is expected in terms of and give regular
feedback. So everyone is on the same page.
Everybody's on the, so get everybody or know what needs to be done. Get everybody on the same page.
Uh-huh.
Monitor and give constant feedback, or let's call it close the loop as quickly as possible. Uh-huh. And then kind of review and evaluate at a point in, or at fixed points in time, and kind of, let's call it, do checkpoints to say, okay, how are we doing? How are we doing? How are we doing? So when I talk about the cycle, I think the problem is we immediately all jump to this 6 month
way
of thinking. See you in 6 months, where I'm going to take out the performance appraisal form, dust it off, and go, 6 months ago we agreed that you would do the following project. How did you do there? Oh, we canned that project. Okay, next one, you know.
No, but even worse.
you know, that kind of thing happens.
But even worse, you have a situation where, you know, some managers, you know, in a big corporation will be given a set of scores, you know, to dish out.
Mm.
And they often work from a deficit standpoint to say, as far down the rung as they keep going, you know, that's where the, you know, the fours and the five, you know, the worst scores, you know, they'll dish out. So I find that problematic because it's incongruent with how you have to continuously be managing performance on a continuous interactive basis.
I think it's not all about just the scoring. I think the scoring is just one part of it. It's to quantify the performance to a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole process is one of calibration.
But do you know, Herat, for example, that I think it's PwC, if I'm not mistaken, in the UK. They said they'll do away with performance management because of some of the issues that we've talked about.
Yeah, well,
that's a radical shift.
I think you cannot get away from performance management. People need to have feedback in some form of way, and I think there need to be reflection. And I think it's an everyday activity. It's not a once off, once a year, twice a year thing. So I think what we're saying is reflect. Whether it's in a planning phase, a monitoring phase, or even in a review. But together with that is the engagement of the owners of businesses and management is to engage with staff, vice versa, and. Mm. I think it's all about calibrating the workforce, in listening and understanding. But together with that is also to pick up competency gaps, and then to build your infuse that into your HR structures, whether that is from a development point of view or whether that is from organizational change point of view or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, well, I mean, as Alice starts talking, I think back to a time I was told very directly that we had a measurement criteria of 1 through 5 with the principle of 3 being acceptable, the average, you know, the midpoint, 4 being well above average, and 5 was the walking on water stuff. And I was told that my team, they looked at my review with my team, and I was told you have too many people that average out above 3. And I looked at them and I said, well, what are you saying? And they said, no, you mistend to 3. So I looked at them and I went, okay, so 2 comments. First of all, A, I have a very small team. So it is not statistically valid that it'll be a norm to be average. So secondly, I have a team of professionals, finance guys.
Competent.
If you only expect average performance from my very small team, I'm sorry to break this to you, but you're not going to be able to run this bank from a financial perspective. Because if I've just recruited average people to do an average job, you're only going to get an average outcome.
Hmm.
So can we please do away with this lovely bell curve distribution idea of averaging, and let's just deal with the real performance of the individuals. I set stiff targets for my team. If they achieve those targets, they get a 3. If they exceed those targets, they get a 4. And let's move on here. It blew my mind that people thought life must just be about average. And it made me stop and question the very process of performance management in some spheres in terms of how it's done. Mm. It kind of almost feels a little bit like matric marking. You know, we mark to the curve kind of story. And I had visions of that again. And I thought to myself, oh, this is really, really dangerous. Mm. And I think the other message that you've got is you've also got this challenge when you start doing things like that of telling people that are below average that you're average because I've moved the curve, so to speak. And you've got people who are working really hard at making a difference, telling them, well, you've now just got to be average.
Yeah, you've got to be average.
It's the
most democratic thing we're doing.
Yeah, we're making everybody
feel
equal. Equal. Everybody's, a black Model T car kind of story. And I think for me, the whole thing of once you know what your expectations are up front in your performance management process, that next kind of point of saying that you take corrective action as performance happens and give a short closed feedback loop. Sure. I'm giving you feedback. I'm not happy with what you did here or the outcome. And I always try and have the conversation and ask people to try and focus on the principle of work has been done or hasn't been done. It's actually not personal.
Mm.
This was the outcome we desired.
Mm.
People were asked to perform. Work has been done or it hasn't been done. And if it has been done and it hasn't been done well, what do we need to do to correct that? Mm. And if it hasn't been done at all, well, how are we going to fix this? And if it has been done and there's a great opportunity, well done, guys, for getting it done properly and you've performed well. And I always kind of worry about that ability to create that very small closed feedback loop. I mean, what's your experience here in terms of how do people go about creating that effectively?
I think it's a two-way stream. The worker is as good as the environment of results that they achieve. And I want to talk about a little bit about the strive in the individual, which you have to almost unlock. So it's almost like if I unlock a worker where I realize that this worker is giving meaning to the business, even if it might not be the outperformer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that person is driven on a 3 levels. The first one is very much a cognitive drive. In other words, there's decisions, discretions they have to use. It's not just meeting results. So they're working with the head. Secondly, there's a psychological drive. Psychological drive is working with the heart. It's their loyalty. They want to be there. But then there's a cognitive drive in the person, and that's where they never give up, even if they make mistakes. And I think what is important here is from a management point of view, is to unlock those 3 drives in the individual. It's not just achieving those goals. Because people then, if they know that they've been seen in giving meaning to the business, then automatically they will just perform out the rest.
You know, what Richard was referring to, this averaging, it's such a dangerous thing because basically it's what constitutes the dead weight in most organizations where high performers aren't getting the due that they require because somehow there has to be this central point where everyone gets averaged out. So I'm just interested to know your thoughts, Gerard, in terms of how do organizations like soccer teams get it right? For example, if you look at Real Madrid, you've got star players there, your Ronaldos, your Gareth Bales. But obviously, someone at the other spectrum isn't going to be saying, I must be rated the same way as the Ronaldo.
Sure.
So how do those organizations get it?
I think it's I think the discussion going on here, Alice, is to determine what is the outperformers and the average retained performers, and then you've got the low performers.
Mm-hmm.
My experience being is we tend to forget about the order retainers. Those high performers, they're going to find another job. They're not going to stay with this company. And that's what you find, especially with the Manilium group, is our focus is mainly on those high performers, but you want them to come back. So they might hop and flounder another job. And if they come back to your organization, at least you've done something to get them back. Mm-hmm. So your main focus, I'm not saying is ignore them. I think it's more those order retainers. Those are the continuous people that's going to stay with your company. Mm-hmm. They're not the high performers, but they're always there and they give that extra mile.
So they need to be spoken to as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. Even the low performers. The low performers, you have to then kick in other procedures, whether it's incapacity route or whether it's a development route. But I'm not saying ignoring them as well. But mm-hmm. I think you have to look at all the categories of performers. But just be aware that the outperformers is not always the people that's going to stay with the company. That's just my view. Mm-hmm. It might not always be the truth, but my experience, especially with the young generation, mm-hmm. is that they like to find, they will find another job.
Sorry, another question for her, right, Richard. So, based on your experience, right, where does then the core competency to get, you know, performance management right lie? Does it lie within the HR structure within the company, or does it lie with the consultants coming in with an outside eye to sort out the mess?
The HR should facilitate the process and make sure that the process is in place. But at mm-hmm. the end of the day, the conduct of the process is very much in the hand of management.
Okay.
And I think that's where it comes back to the calibration of the process. Mm-hmm.
So people like yourself, where in the spectrum do you then fit in?
We would go in advice and to see where the loopholes are, and then try to close it with procedures. Uh-huh. And I think one of the procedures is codes of conduct.
Okay.
Because you need to create a performance culture. And how do you create a performance culture? You need to have some form of a code of ethic.
Mm-hmm. We've spoken about that, Richard.
And mm-hmm. I think that is driven into the procedures. It's not just the process. It's the soft ethics, but also the hard ethics. The hard ethics, yes, we need to have a contract. But what is a soft ethic? And I think that is sometimes misassumed that this will happen.
Okay.
The one thing I want to comment on is I think we often have this, and I mean, I have the saying with people, you know, to a leadership team, you are HR. Okay. Don't try and make your people, your team, an HR consultant's problem. And I think there's often this, I'll go out and be nice with my people and I'll do the nice things. I'll do the team build with them, but I won't performance manage them.
Yeah,
I won't have hard conversations. I only do the nice things
that's the
with
dirty
my team.
Stuff.
Yeah, I don't hold people accountable. Mm. I dodge having that tough conversation about work that hasn't been done. I kind of sit there and go, well, I'll just pretend I didn't see them pitching for work when they did, or I'll pretend that it's okay to not participate actively at a, you know, in something
or
that
go would, and leave or without authorization
or whatever. Yeah. I mean, the myriad of sins out there, and I think we often, as leadership and as let's call it management, we don't engage accountability in our own world. You know, and I often used to say, and I still say to people, so what are you going to do about this? You know, they'll come and they'll have a big whine about, you know, we're not able to do this or my staff are doing that. And they'll use the words my staff. And then the moment something's got to happen, I look at them and say, so what are you going to do about that as their leader?
Well,
and they look at me and they go, oh, no, that's an HR issue.
Yeah, or so long as it doesn't affect the whole team, it's okay. We'll just ignore that one problem.
Yeah, and I go, so 5 minutes ago, you were talking about my staff, but now they're somebody else's staff when you've got to deal with an issue. So it's amazing how they have this like schizophrenic moment. You know, we often in accounting always say, you know, you remember all about the income, but you forget about the expenses. In the case of people, we remember about all the good things that we do with them, but when it comes to the tough things, we kind of shy away from it. I guess my question to you, Gerard, is how do you let's call it get that ethical, true leadership engagement from a performance management perspective. Let's call it the true conversation to happen. I mean, what's your experience there?
I think it's not just only a management culture that you want to set, but I think it's definitely you can measure it in some form of a culture. Now, if you look at the culture, it's almost like looking walking past the department and you can see who's in charge here.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what does it tell you? Who's the leader there? Who's the manager? So it's got to do with the encounter, the manager with its staff and how the staff all on board with the manager. So it's a very much a partnership. But at the end of the day, talking from a leader's perspective is a potential influence and engagement that you have with your staff that will also determine the outcome of the performance reviews and processes happening in the world of work. HR's role is, as I said, a facilitating one. It's an assisting one. It's a consulting role. It's making sure that training needs to happen, gaps, competency gaps needs to be filled, whether it's knowledge, skills, or attitudes have been changed. So that's basically where HR plays a role, or to come in as a third party. When I say as a third party, when there's a disciplinary hearing or a termination of condition or whatever the case might be, that's where HR then plays a very, very vital role, because sometimes management might be part of the problem. In the performance and not just the worker.
It always is. Right, let's be frank here. Management's always the problem.
Well, you know, I've often asked thought this to myself is that, you know, you listen to somebody talk, a leader in the team, and you think to yourself, wow, if you got given guidance the way you're giving guidance, it's not surprising that things aren't going to work out too well, because it's this almost vague, obfuscated set of instructions. And often, unfortunately, it's a case of it's an incapable leader who doesn't quite know how to support their own team. And, you know, there's this big always this question of, you know, so how much do you lead? How much do you tell? But the reality is if your staff member says, or your team says, how do I go about doing this? And you don't have a clue. Well, you know, there's a problem here. You have to know how to, and you may not need to know the specifics, but you do need to know how to unlock the answers for your team. Who to speak to, how to speak to them, how to get an answer, how to get an outcome. And yeah, I often shudder when, and the bravest of leaders and the bravest of management are the people that look at their team and go, you know what? I actually don't know either. So let's just think this through. How do we go about solving and finding out that question? Because it's a brilliant question. The question is going to get us to the right answer. I can't answer it. Let's collectively figure out how we're going to get that, you know, get that answer, and they support and support their staff member through the process. Often what happens from a performance perspective is they go, I don't have time right now for this, or that's not in the remit for this meeting, or we're not going to talk about that now. You need to figure that out, and they basically drop their team.
Absolutely,
and that once again gets back to that cultural the culture of performance expectation, when in actual fact there's no ability to execute on that, and that's very dangerous.
Richard, you've touched a very important point. I think it's part of the learning culture, mm-hmm. in saying that performance is not just about reviews; it's about development. And I want to finish off with this view, and I'm not sure if I'm correct to say that managers that know how to receive feedback.
Mm.
Very interesting is to see how they give feedback and how they engage with their staff, because in my experience it's quite dramatic to talk a little bit. That's a debate of another day.
Totally, but to that point, I think culture then is very important, because the organization's culture should enable that to happen.
So, closing comment as we close up today: remember that feedback is a gift. It's given to you. You decide what you're going to do with it. And the person who's giving feedback, remember that you are giving a gift. If somebody doesn't know what to do with it, that's their decision, not yours. They're not throwing it away. They're just not using it the way you would intend it to be used. But it's not your problem. You gave the gift. They must decide how they use it. Gerard, thank you very much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
That was our conversation, business skills conversation, brought to you in association with USB Ed, with Gerard Bunzea. He's human resources performance management expert from Kutala. Consulting.
Kutaza.
Kutaza Consulting. Well, we now heading to our next segment of this hour, which will be our SME Showcase with Dan Dutoit, co-owner of Mark One Media.
This is CliffCentral.com.